Hello, a very warm welcome to Fireside Chats. I am Magla Pillay, and today we are taking up the subject of God's promise. This topic is filled with a sense of promise because I'm sure many of you had the thought in your mind, where is God? Is he with me? Does he know me? Does he understand me? And particularly, is God aware of what I am going through? We'd all like to know that we are not alone in this universe, and it has been the experience of many, although we have loved ones in our lives, friends, family, pets, etc. There's still the deep sense of wanting to know whether there is a supreme power and whether you are related to him or her in any way. If this has been the question in your mind, then sit tight for the next half an hour because we have in the studio with us today Sister Denise, who has been practicing Raja Yoga meditation for 40 years, who is very well versed in the subject of spirituality and who will enlighten us on this and other topics. Sister Denise, very, very warm welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us. God's promise, even that title has such a sweet sensation about it. Does God make a promise to whom?
There are memorials of this that exist in different mythologies, scriptures, religions. In the culture that I grew up in England, it was quite common to hear the expression, God comes secretly like a thief in the night. Have you heard that one?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. So, you hear this and then you think, what is this? How do they know? What does it mean? Then in the Gita, there is something very clearly expounded.
Sorry, you're referring to the Bhagavad Gita, the
The
Hindu
Bhagavad
scripture.
Gita,
Okay, yes.
yes. And there it is said, and I am paraphrasing in English, that whenever the Dharma, religion, reaches a state of irreligion, and whenever karma reaches a state where it is absolutely negative, when it reaches the extreme point at that time, I incarnate in Bharat. Bharat is a word for India. It's also a word for the land of plenty. And the land of plenty is also referred to in other scriptures. So I incarnate in Bharat and I destroy irreligion and I establish true religion. So this is the promise. And so then the question arises, well, when is that? And so people are thinking, is it bad enough yet? And some people say, definitely it's bad enough. Then there's other people who say, well, I'm not having any problems. It's not bad enough, So there's different opinions. And I think that one of the things that people are beginning to feel is that there's very, very few places in the world where people really do feel safe, where they have all the forms of happiness, health, wealth, comfort, and everything. Even if they have for themselves, you have to see a little bit outside your comfort area. And you find that, well, there's a great deal of human suffering that's going on, and it's a bit difficult to be happy when there are so many other people who are unhappy. So, people are beginning to think, well, it's looking like bad enough, so, probably God should be somewhere around. In India, there is a very well-known festival which is called Shivratri, the night of Shiva. And so that corresponds with the idea of God coming secretly like a thief in the night. But then night has another meaning as well. Night is, you know, period of darkness, period of ignorance, period where no one is enlightened. So, you know, if God will come at a time when humanity is in dire straits, then in what form? How would you know? What would God do and how? And what is all this? Very unclear, you know. But so there are these indicators which are known all across the world in different ways. There are stories that you get of the master coming to knock at your door in disguise. And so the question is, do you recognize and welcome the master in, or do you, you know, reject and say, go away, I don't need you? Because there's this idea of God being disguised. Disguised as ordinary, disguised as something that requires a special kind of discernment to be able to recognize. So, I mean, there are a few clues that indicate that God is a someone who can come from somewhere, to bring something to whom? To us, to humanity.
Okay. Sister Denise, why is truth a secret? It boggles the mind that that which is real and that which is true is also that aspect that we as humanity are most ignorant about.
Well, you know, you must have heard the expression the awful truth, and one of the problems with truth is it's usually pretty unpleasant.
I've heard the expression the god awful truth.
But awe has another meaning, which is something that you are in awe of, that it's something so great, so extraordinary, that you're not quite sure how to deal with it, because it is so away from how you normally think or the everyday world that you are in, you know. So truth is a word that is difficult to deal with because don't really know what you mean by that. But any time any falsehood is exposed and the truth about that particular thing is shown up, you know, someone's head's going to roll. So people are afraid of truth. People say, I just want to know the truth. But then if you come along and tell them, they say, don't tell me that, you know, I don't want to know. So we have a very ambivalent, I think, relationship with truth. I mean, if you say, okay, God is the truth, you want to know God, what would happen if I do that? There's a certain amount of trepidation, you know. There's the idea of, okay, you stand in front of God naked and alone, you feel really exposed because there's this idea that God can see everything about you. You may want to hide a few things. You can't hide anything from God. You know, people know a few things like this. And when the possibility of coming in front of truth or accessing truth comes along, it makes people afraid because they have things to hide, because they may not be clean, they may not be honest. So, you know, it takes someone with a very pure heart to have the guts to go in front of God, you know. So there are these things, but you know, there are people who say, okay, you know, they think about things. They say, okay, maybe it's bad enough, you know, maybe it's corrupt enough, maybe man's inhumanity to man has reached a point. I don't think we want it to go further than it's gone. So perhaps God is around here somewhere. So you start looking. Where do you look for God?
Yeah, about that. Do you find him or does he find you?
Well, I think that
if you are lucky enough to be found.
I think that it's easier for God to find you than for you to find God, because you don't know where to look.
That
I mean, people
true.
Do look. They go to the pilgrimage places, they go into the scriptures, they go into meditation and monasteries and to the ocean, to the mountains, so many places, but God is not of this world. And people are of this world. So you're looking for God, you're looking for God in this world, who is not of this world or in this world. It's not likely to be successful. But I think what people do is they invoke God. Please come. And there are expressions that you hear whenever there are two or more gathered in my name, I present myself there, you see. So there is experiences that people have. So I think that if you are a person who is sincere and genuine and has maintained love for God as you understand him or as you think he or she might be, you know, you're likely to get found. And I think that there are people who experience a calling. And when people feel called, then, you know, sometimes they may have visionary experiences or signs, or all sorts of things can happen where a person will even respond so drastically as to completely change their way of life, which may be quite a hedonistic or sinful way of life, and really make themselves pure and be with God and go to God. And that will, of course, be a bit of a shock to the other people who say, what's wrong with this one, you know? So when you get found or you find or you think you find or whatever, some changes take place and you start to make your life more and more godly, because people know God stands for truth, purity, beauty, integrity, etc. So you start lining yourself up with those godly qualities.
Okay. Is it, Denise? In order to experience God, there must be a sense of that I'm worthy. Okay. There are many who feel that, yuck, I'm so yuck, why will God want to have anything to do with me?
I think that that's not true, that in order to experience God you have to be worthy. God would say, why, if you're worthy, then you don't need me. It's the unworthy ones that need to experience God. So this is what very often happens. Someone feels so unworthy and so, you know, unclean, that they kind of give up on themselves, and they may say, oh God, you know, and commend themselves to God. This is something that will cause God to give them an experience of love and peace, you see. So, I mean, there are those who strive for purity who can attract God, and there are those who are, you know, everybody else would say these are unworthy, but, you know, they may be deep down so spiritually wounded and so spiritually desirous, and God will see that, you see. So people presume many things about God, but God doesn't really behave the way people think, and is definitely not beholden to people for anything, really. Completely independent.
Sister Denise, I once heard the expression that God is the only one who can tell mankind who he is. And it's not that mankind can profess to know who and what God is. How does that sit with you?
A well-known expression from Teilhard de Chardin, who is a theological philosopher from France, has famously said, only God can define himself. And I absolutely agree with that.
So when a person has a desperate need for God, and there are many who are in that position, What should their processes be?
I don't think it's really about a should, and I don't think it's even for me to say, but I can say that over the years there are countless examples of people who have, in a state of desperation, turned to God and found a response. And of course, each one's situation is very different. You know, in my own situation, I was not desperate at all, but I was feeling that something's going to happen, and feeling that, you know, I think that I'm going to meet God, but I don't know whether I'll recognize. That was my concern. And I had these feelings that, you know, the life I'm leading at the moment, it's going to be over soon. So I was kind of expectant rather than desperate, you know. And I think, you know, there's going to be so many different circumstances that occur immediately before somebody feels that they find God or get found by God or something like this. And there's a lot of people, they slowly, you know, begin to put a little bit more spirituality and mix it into the mixture, and gradually a little bit less and less unspiritual. And a lot of people proceed very slowly into their spirituality, so that the change is very gentle, and you know, there's no particular big drama about it. That's many people like this.
Hmm. Sister Denise, you've given us the knowledge on the subject, but God's relationship with His children is personal, it's intimate, it's a heart thing, isn't it? It's not a head thing. It's a heart.
It's a heart thing.
It's a heart thing. Tell us about God's heart and what's in God's heart in relation to His child.
You know, one thing that I think is that, I mean, God is the bestower. God contains within His, her being everything that is needed by humanity. And God is motivated by love, and love is not a warm, fuzzy feeling. People like to think it is.
It's not?
No.
Well, okay, hold on. Maybe our next topic should be, what is love? But that's a subject for another day.
No, the love of God is this compulsion or impulsion within God to pour everything of Himself into humanity at the time when it is really empty, which I think relates to that promise that we were talking about a little bit earlier, that at the time when humanity becomes completely irreligious and empty and negative, that's the time when it has to be filled up again. So perhaps we could say God is a bit of an extremist, you know, going to perfection and imperfection, because it's really the period of time, the cusp between perfection and imperfection, that makes God the most active. And any other period of time, God is more observant, more passive, doesn't really do anything in the same way as, I think, tremendously active at this time. So, you know, all the qualities that we all have, the virtues, the specialities, a devotional person will always say that these are gifts that I received from God. Or they will say their fortune is a gift they received from God, or their child is a gift from God, or their, you know, their land is a gift from God, or even their day is a gift from God. So they feel in that way that God is the giver and I am receiving these gifts. So this is how I think that God relates to people, that so much love that just pours everything, the wisdom, the virtues, the treasures are poured into the children. Now, of course, some people, they like it, they want it, they take more. Other people, they don't like it, they don't take hardly any. So there's a lot of variation. But I think that being a soul, God is not a human soul, but nevertheless a soul, and a soul likes other souls. And so God would say, well, you have each other, but I only have you. So you are the humanity and the world, the planet, the creation is the object of attention, the object of affection of God. That's the relationship. Hmm. But I think God is also bound by these extremes I was talking about earlier, and the time of extreme has to arrive before God can, you know, act. And when the extreme arises, it causes God to act. So there's a causal relationship there.
Hmm. Okay. So is there any preparation one can do for this all-important meeting? Do you just wait to see whether you're one of the chosen ones? Ah, that's another one topic. Are there some that are chosen, some that are not?
You know, there's an expression that you find in the Bible or in Christian literature. Many are called, but few are chosen. And, you know, you hear these things and you wonder, well, what does this mean? If you're called, then you're chosen. But it doesn't say that. It says, you know, many are called, few are chosen. Are they chosen or do they respond to the call, perhaps? And I think it's more like that, that I think God will put out to the whole world, you know, hey, it's time now, you know, let's get together. And there are some people who say yes, and other people who say no. And there are little stories about that in the different mythologies, about, you know, messengers being sent by God to the world to say, okay, do you want to come to heaven? And finding very few takers, because some people say, well, that means I have to die. Or even one of the stories, God will ask a worm, well, do you want to go to heaven? Well, do they have any dirt there? You see, so it really is a story that says that people are not ready to go to God, because going to God means you have to look at yourself spiritually, you have to awaken spiritually, you have to leave all your attachments and your hedonism and all of that. And I think that people are not so interested in doing that, because people are very keen on materialism and sense pleasure and living in the everyday world of all the different vices. And then there are some, I think few, who just say, well, the most important thing for me is truth or God or clarity, understanding. It's a minority. So many are called, few will choose.
So even though God may present himself to you, you still have the choice as to whether you want him in your life or not?
Well, I think God has got a very, very light touch. You know, and will kind of tap you on the shoulder, you won't come. I didn't see anybody.
Okay. So it's a question of recognition, it's a question of choice.
Yeah, and you want, you know, the things have to come together. Sometimes a person will, what I have encountered, somebody will say, yeah, I think this is true, I think this is right, I think this is good, but I'm too young, I'll come when I'm older because I want to live first. You know, there are many like that. Or there are some who say, well, I'm busy, I've got my children, this and that, and I'll come later when I'm free, you know. But I think the attitude of, well, when I've got time, I'll come, it means that you're not likely to be able to take that much advantage. I think there's a lot of merit in if you get a call and you recognize and you say yes, there's a huge amount of merit in it because God is heavily disguised.
Why?
Because I think God wants to know who's really, really interested. You know, if it was too easy, God is kind of good businessman.
Shrewd.
Very shrewd, yeah. And God is very reciprocal. So if somebody says, okay, God, I recognize you, I'm coming, what do we have to do now? Then God will actually make you as an instrument. God has a task. It's a huge task. The task of purifying all the souls, the task of informing everybody of his truth, the task of actually transforming the world as we know it into a world of paradise or heaven, which is a major undertaking. And if anybody says, okay, I'll help, you know, count me in, then there has to be a reward. And so God will reward those who are willing to sacrifice their easy life for the risk that they, you know, they may or may not have recognized right, you see. Because it is also said, you know, when God comes, there are countless false gods. And so the ability to recognize the right one, that's pretty good, because there's plenty of others who, you know, are presenting themselves. No, I'm the real God, I'm the real God. I mean, it's all over the place.
Okay, so we have to say goodbye to you. A lovely topic, Sister Denise. God's promise, filled with richness and wonder. And a question that you need to ask yourselves is, if God does tap you on the shoulder and whisper in your direction, child, I'm here, are you ready? Will you accept his hand? Spiritual marriage? Good question. Sister Denise has taken us through a very fascinating topic of what God is, who God is, and what his promise to humanity is. And it's a question that has been in the minds of many for many years, whether you have just an idea of God or whether God is real to you. And this is whether you love God or not. So, fascinating topic, something worth thinking about. And I really love what Sister Denise shared, that God is not a head thing, it's a heart thing. So, when examining the subject of God in your own life, look into your own heart as well. So, I do wish you everything of the best on your own spiritual quest. Thank you and goodbye.